Any unauthorized reproduction or distribution of this audio recording is in violation of copyright laws.
Wings of Discovery. The story and characters are fictional. The lessons on life and flying are real. By Captain Stacy L. Chance. Chapter 1. White Knuckles. Her highlighted hair is neatly pulled back, and she wears a crisp white uniform blouse tucked into a regulation-length navy blue skirt. An attractive woman in her early 30s, she appears unfazed by our circumstances. She's clearly a professional, experienced, knowledgeable, and obviously trained in life-saving techniques. Calmly making her way down the aisle, she wears a business-like expression that says, "Please don't bother me unless it's important." How does she maintain her composure in the middle of this chaos? Doesn't she realize the certain danger we face? Suddenly, my seat shudders and shakes. I instinctively brace for the worst, and the rumbling beneath me fuels a gasp of shock. Outside my window, strange flickers of light split the darkness with odd horizontal lines. Is it rain, hail, or snow streaking by? Just as I take a deep breath to get a grip on my fear, we abruptly drop. My drink sloshes and threatens to spill as the horrible sensation of freefall shoots my stomach up into my throat. How can I get rid of this soda? Maybe the flight attendant will be back to collect our drinks before my shirt gets stained. But is it really safe for her to be up and about? A quick glance reveals that she doesn't look concerned in the least. Her easy smile and pleasant conversation with a woman up the aisle does nothing to ease my gnawing fear. I make an effort to appear relaxed, despite my feeling our lives are in jeopardy. Like any ordinary person, I want to feel in control of my fate. I tell myself that fear is natural when facing the unknown or when feeling threatened. In spite of efforts to rationalize my feelings, panic begins to surface. My mind fights to stay in charge, but my body's natural defense mechanism kicks into high gear. My head reels and my stomach churns as my hands become cold and clammy. I can't catch my breath, and as my heart races faster, a new worry escalates. Am I going to pass out, have a heart attack, or lose control altogether? Minutes pass before I realize the plane is stabilized. With a sigh, I close my eyes and try to catch my breath. I don't understand these feelings and fears. As an educated 43-year-old, I shouldn't be frightened. I've always been able to handle difficult situations with poise, and now I can't seem to keep anxiety from setting in. Feeling miserable, I'm embarrassed by my failure to maintain even basic self-control. A couple of sharp jolts cause the wings to bounce and flex, testing the plane's structure. Perspiration beads on my forehead, the engines growl and surge, and my hands flex and clench in response. I do not belong here. This is a mistake. Why do we choose to hurtle through the stratosphere in large metal tubes? I should have never stepped foot onto this plane. Stuck in my mind are the haunting words that played on the radio as I drove to the airport. Bye-bye, Miss American Pie. This will be the day that I die. This will be the day that I die. I'm not usually superstitious, but now I'm worried the lyrics may be prophetic. People say Don McLean's song is about 50s music, how it's changed since Buddy Holly's untimely death, a young life cut short by a plane crash. It occurs to me this would be an especially unfortunate coincidence. My mind is cluttered with morbid thoughts of looming disaster. My greatest fear is turbulence, and each bump and drop sends me closer to the edge of self-control. Will a large air pocket cause a wing to shed? With just one wing, the plane would surely spin out of control as the pilots hopelessly struggle to upright the crippled ship. Plunging at ever greater speeds, the death spiral would generate terrifying screams from all aboard. As we are pressed deeper into our seats under the accelerating forces, the airframe would creak and groan from the tremendous strain. People and objects would be tossed crazily about the cabin. I imagine the plane auguring earthward. Time would slow to an agonizing pace as we collectively ponder our horrifying and unavoidable demise. Twisting down, down, down. What will that last fraction of a second feel like? Our nightmare would abruptly end in a deafening crash, followed by an intense firestorm engulfing the impact crater and surrounding landscape. The next morning's headlines would brazenly shout out the death toll in huge, bold type. Ding! In a cold sweat and numb with fear, I'm jolted back to the present to see that the seatbelt sign is illuminated. Then the indistinct drawl of the pilot sounds over the garbled PA system as I strain to listen for an explanation. "Well, ladies and gentlemen, it looks as if we're entering an area of a little bumpiness as we fly through some of these rain showers. I've turned on the seatbelt sign, so for your own safety, we ask that you please return to your seats and make sure your seatbelts are securely fastened. This is a little bumpiness? We're pounding all over the sky, and the pilot only now turns on the seatbelt sign? How long has he been flying planes? We've got a damn cowboy driving this thing. I struggle to calm down and recover my sanity. This is irrational. The trip started out routinely enough. Arriving at San Francisco International Airport late in the afternoon for my trip to Denver, I hoped for an uneventful flight. The security screening made me feel better about the improbability of a hijacking. I could see they were checking everyone carefully and was relieved to know more flights now have air marshals on board. The 9/11 attacks have made passengers more aware, and I'm comforted by the belief that they will no longer sit passively by while hijackers take control of a jetliner. The plane was half full, so the boarding process went smoothly. As I took my seat, I considered what I'd recently read on a travel website. I learned there was really no safest seat on the plane. Apparently, there are so many variables involved, it would be hard to predict which seat would be the best in an accident. The website discussed other seating considerations. It said you can reduce the sensation of motion by sitting over the wings because you will be at the airplane's pivot point. Not surprisingly, the center seat is the least favored seat on the plane because you may end up having armrest wars with your seatmates. I chose a window seat over the wing, hoping to get a nap and a smooth ride. Unfortunately, I would get little of either. After a short taxi to the runway, the beginning of the takeoff seemed normal. In the past, I enjoyed the feeling of power and acceleration, but now a new cloud of dread surrounds me with every flight. As if to feed my fears, the nose of the plane rose too high. I felt a distinct dip just after we left the ground. It was as if the whole plane was going to tip over, but incredibly it managed to keep climbing. Next, there was a series of strange whining and thumping noises, which shook what little confidence I felt. How can something as massive as a jetliner even get off the ground? Now, an hour into my flight, I'm a total wreck. I feel trapped, panicky, out of control, and self-conscious about my nervousness. A wild thought pops into my head, and I wonder how many passengers have had the uncontrollable urge to get up and scramble to the nearest exit to try to open the door in flight. Could others have such absurd ideas? Several minutes pass without incident, and I begin to calm down. With rationality taking over, I now feel disgusted by my behavior. How had I, Mark Thomas, become such a fearful flyer? I am a successful veterinarian with a thriving practice and wonderful family. How have I reached such a new low? This was supposed to be a simple weekend jaunt to my 25th high school reunion. In my childhood, I loved watching airplanes and even dreamt of flight. I've flown many times as an adult and experienced few problems. But recently, the pressures of life have grown to nourish new anxieties. I've even experienced panic attacks in crowded places like busy malls and ball games. What's going on? Exactly where is this new vulnerability coming from? If I could identify the source, at least I could try to change things. My guess as I get older, the inevitability of my own mortality is starting to sink in. What will happen to my family when I'm gone? Reflecting on my past, I'm forced to recognize that fear is something I have a hard time admitting to anyone, including my family. The last few years, I've done my best to avoid air travel. When it was time to plan a vacation, I always steered us away from flying in favor of road trips. My wife Jennifer would occasionally suggest jetting off to exotic destinations, but the thought of spending countless hours high above wide expanses of open water didn't particularly thrill me. I decided Jennifer shouldn't go with me on this trip because our daughter Shannon shouldn't be left alone with the school year just starting. This decision was both a relief and a disappointment. It would have been good to have Jennifer come along, but I felt ashamed of the intensity of my fears. I just couldn't let Jennifer see me this way. I'm not sure which agonizes me more, the fear of flying or the fear of fear. In my eyes, Jennifer hasn't changed much since I met her in college. A statuesque brown-haired, brown-eyed beauty, she is spirited and smart. She felt self-conscious about her height in high school, but by her early 20s, when I met her, she'd filled out her tall frame quite nicely. As we dated, her self-confidence blossomed, and she developed into a warm and compassionate mate. She's a great parent to our daughter, sensitive yet firm, and always supportive of Shannon's adventures and interests. Even now I catch glimpses of Jennifer as the fun-loving, impetuous college girl I fell in love with. The more comfortable she's become with herself, the more she's able to relax and display her playful, spontaneous side. She is to me the embodiment of Van Morrison's song, Brown Eyed Girl. After spending years making sure my family and practice received the attention they needed, my own friendship suffered. Friends once important to me in school and early adulthood seemed to drift away. I thought this trip might do me good to see how some of my old buddies are getting along on our journey through life. Finished with my soft drink, I began to relax. Cabin lights are low, and with the flight now smooth, the passenger in front of me decides to take a nap. She reclines her seat, confining me to an uncomfortably small area, pinning my knees. Feeling a bit agitated, I try to calm myself with a magazine in the seat back pocket. These airline magazines always seem bland. I begin to read an article on the Hawaiian Islands, thinking this is a subject sure to quiet my mind. The page reads, "The lush green island of Kauai is one of the wettest spots on Earth. It averages more rain than the other islands of Hawaii. It is also called the Garden Island." I wonder if anyone ever says, "Hey, honey, let's book a flight to Kauai. We've got to get out of this sunshine and make sure to pack the umbrella. This'll be fun." Looking out my window into the darkness, I'm relieved that the flashes of light appear too regular to be lightning. It must be the plane's strobe lights. With each flash, the streaks of raindrops appear frozen in time, but now they look larger. Has the rain gotten harder? It doesn't take long for my anxiety to build once again. Straining to see if the droplets have grown, I conclude they not only look larger, but they appear more densely packed. Oh no, here we go again. I put down my magazine and speculate how much water a modern jet engine can consume without quitting. Surely with heavy rain entering the engine, the fire burning inside would be extinguished. First one, then soon the other engine would flame out as it struggles to maintain the jet's altitude. With both engines dead and no generators to provide electricity or hydraulics, it would get awfully dark and quiet. I suppose the autopilot would soon click off and the instruments would go blank, but that would hardly matter because the pilots would no longer have control of our aircraft. Every poor soul on board would just be along for the ride, and a dark, terrifying ride it would be. Without power to control the plane, I picture it tipping over and dipping downward into the stormy night. Disappearing from radar, the plane would begin a spiral towards the ground. As the plane turns and plummets in my mind, I imagine how my heart would beat harder and harder from the flood of adrenaline. Saying my prayers, I would reaffirm my love for my family. Pulsing and throbbing, the strong heart muscle would attempt to break free of its rib cage, causing a massive... "Snap out of it," I shout to myself. How the hell did I go from the beautiful Hawaiian Islands to my heart muscle exploding out of my chest at the precise moment of the plane's impact? I've got to get control of my imagination. I recite to myself, "Get a grip, get a grip." My feeble attempts to regain composure fail as my white-knuckled hands involuntarily grasp the armrests in a subconscious attempt to keep the plane upright. A trickle of sweat snakes down my face, and I wonder if technology is really worth the trouble. Desperately hanging on, I realize I have another hour and a half to ponder that question before we, God help us, finally land. With a pleasant but concerned smile, the flight attendant approaches. Sir, may I get you something else to drink? Interrupted from my private world of panic, my eyes dart upward.